Welcome to Critical Hit, a Major Spoilers Dungeons & Dragons podcast. Thanks for joining us this week. We are in the off-season right now, which means that we're trying to buffer up some space, and we're trying to ensure that Rodrigo is ready to deliver a fantastic fourth season. Yes. We're also making sure that Rob is ready to unleash his awesomeness and show everybody how he... Well, it's actually it's just going to be called the off-season. I don't know if we can call it a Game Master's Workshop, because it's not...
No.
It's how the other GMs live, if you want to put it that way.
I don't like that. That sounds dangerous.
Lifestyles of the nerdy and more nerdy.
But we've got that coming
up. I've heard where Rob lives.
So not rich or famous.
We've got that coming up in a few weeks. And then we've just got some horrible scheduling issues with all of our schedules right now. And so we're trying to juggle that and ensure that we don't have... big gaps in recording for you guys. Mm-hmm. So that's why this week we're going back into the mailbag to answer more of your emails. And I know some of you may say, get back to the game plan. But I know that there's a lot of you who send us emails to podcast@majorspoilers.com asking for advice. And even though it may be a little tardy in getting in our replies to you, considering that we're just now at Thanksgiving, here we go. On to my questions, says Sean. I've been trying to put a game together with some friends of mine, but most of them are only so motivated to get started, which led me to consider doing a solo campaign. We kind of answered this last question, episode. Have any of you tried a solo campaign, and what were some of the benefits and drawbacks of running them?
Haven't tried it.
No.
Well, I mean,
The drawbacks are large, and it means that you as a game master have to put in a lot of work.
Wussy, 4th edition, we gotta play by the rules. But no, let me tell you about solo games.
Large reason why I do play with multiple people is because I do have more than one friend.
Yeah, we've actually got a large enough group that we have too many players most of the time.
Outside the mechanics, the social interaction amongst the different people is what makes the game different and fun than many other game activities.
When I was in... high school, and I don't know if you can even do this anymore, and maybe Matthew did this, at a track meet one day, and one of the more interesting classmates, younger than me, I think he's 2 years younger than me, was doing a D&D session without any materials. He was basically making it up as they went along, and they would throw out a random number or pick a number between this and this, and he was doing things calculating in his head. But the two or three people that were just sitting around were having a blast, and they didn't even know that they were playing Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh, sure.
So can something like that work?
Pure, absolutely.
Storytelling, where it's, you know, it's an engaged storytelling method.
Yeah, my roommate used to work at the prison south of here, and some of the prisoners would actually, during their free time every day, the three of them, I believe it was three of them, would sit down and play a pencilless, paperless, diceless game of D&D.
And now if prisons want to do that, that's how they have to do it, because it's been outlawed in many prison systems. So, interesting. Okay. Matthew, you had some other options or other ideas or not?
I did, and I think that as the game has become more codified and we get to the point where, you know, fighters have powers, but we can't call them powers.
No, they're called powers. They're not called spells.
You get four interruptions of any given sentence.
Only
at
four?
Which point
it's one each.
Oh, there's my one.
Oh, how the tables have turned.
All right, while the baboons are off having fun, I'm going to explain something. The thing about Dungeons & Dragons that really is wonderful is the fact that it can be translated for any number of players. So when, you know, if you want to write in and you want to say to us, hey, Critical Hit guys, how's it going? Can I do X? The answer will always be yes, and there will always be drawbacks. But the main positivity of having a one-player session, whether you do it as multiple NPCs or one player all alone in the world, is you have specific feedback. You have that one character, and it's all about that one character. And there are times when that type of game, I certainly wouldn't do it, you know, always, but then again, I once ran a game with 16 players, and I wouldn't ever do that again either. When it comes down to it, that one-to-one interaction can really boil down what's awesome about the game. it can also reveal the flaws. But I think the trick of it is, don't think of it as one-player game. Don't think of it as, how do I modify for one player? Think of it the same way you would with anything. What's the story we want to tell? What are the characters that I have to work with? Or, you know, where am I going with this? What's going to be fun?
And just from a mechanic standpoint, and we probably should have brought this up last time that we talked about this as well. I would say, since if you're going to run a one-player game, talk to your player and make sure that he's okay with running and try to convince him to play a class that is survivable. A fighter, a paladin, those two
paladin
kind of things.
Probably the, be the best.
Your defender types would probably be your strongest bet. Your damagey types, your strikers, are going to be the sort of thing where if they get the jump on the enemies, they'll win. But if they don't, they'll get probably slaughtered.
Yeah.
Definitely, your leader is probably the next category, but leaders tend to deal very little damage, so that'll prolong fights, and they'll be able to heal themselves, but the fights will be very long and slow.
Yeah.
The other thing you have is try another system.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
D&D
is not set up for
single player
combat.
But,
A lot of other systems can handle it a lot better than D&D can.
Yeah, World of Warcraft does an excellent job.
He said systems, not chaotic, loosey craziness.
Now, like, World of Darkness handles it quite a bit better because they've got...
Oh, God, he said the W word.
It does.
Oh, we don't like World of Darkness now? Is that it? Dice have to have at least 10 more sides.
World of Darkness does it quite a bit better, cause at least in the previous edition. I'm not as familiar with the current edition, but at least in the previous edition, there was actual story plots in most of the campaign type settings.
Yeah,
where duels happened regularly.
Yeah, World of Darkness really de-emphasizes combat a lot, and that's a complaint that a lot of people have about it, is that because it de-emphasizes combat. Combat is not a structure. There's a lot of places where it gets murky. That is something that in a one-player game can actually work to your advantage.
Mm-hmm. You know, just a few episodes ago, we played the Legend of Drizzt board game.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of fun playing that game. I really did. And, you know, some people might want to consider maybe that's an option. If you can't get together a regular group, if you can't find five people to be in your campaign, maybe just one or two people is all you need to play a board game like this.
That's true. That's a
and
really
it still
idea.
Brings
yeah,
in a lot
cool.
of the. It brings in a lot of the fantasy, the role. You can put in role playing. I threw in some role playing. Wasn't very good role playing, but I threw it in there.
I thought it was great, Steven.
I thought it was entertaining.
Thank you, Rodrigo.
I thought it was as good as any role play you
But this brings up, and again, this is a show that primarily focuses on Dungeons and Dragons because that's something that we all have something in common, and it's interesting. But we're not being sponsored by Wizards of the Coast for whatever reason. They said they didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
So that does give us the option to talk about other gaming systems. And
although
Suresh,
even if they were, we'd probably still talk about other
Suraj. I don't know how to pronounce this person's name. Seraj.
Sorry,
I've been a huge fan of your podcast, especially Critical Hit. Discovered them while I was overseas, and they really helped me pass my many long bus rides in Israel. So I was not in the USA for 3 years to be exact. It would seem that all the people that I used to play with have disappeared. Not to mention all the game systems I used to know are gone. I'm preparing to invest in Paper and Pen again, but I have a few questions. Finding a new group. In the past, it was easy. I was in high school. I was a geek. Now I'm still a geek, but the social circles are kind of wacky. I guess the local Minnesotan comic shops are an option, but it's often hard to work up the courage to brave the unwashed masses for anything other than my necessary fixes. So again, we've talked about CatG, Society of Tabletop Gamers, or whatever it is.
Collegiate Association of Tabletop Gamers.
Okay, so if you're in college, that's certainly an option.
They have a Facebook page, CATTG. You can look it up, and it'll come right up.
Might be CATT-G.
Okay. And, you know, again, if you're afraid of approaching people, you know, Matthew, do you guys run encounters at Gatekeeper Comics and Hobbies, Huntoon Engage, Topeka? Also,
honestly,
not a sponsor of the show.
Generally, no.
You guys don't?
Okay. Nah, generally
you,
not.
You might want to, and I say this only because a lot of people go and do encounters. It's a D&D thing that Wizards of the Coast puts on at certain comic book shops, and it gives you the ability to go in and sit down and play with a group of people and play that one, 2 or 3 hours or however long the event goes.
Yeah.
And don't you go through basically
just one fight,
one
I believe,
fight or something like
understand.
That? And you never know. You might after going multiple times, or maybe just one time, might find some people that you get along with.
And really, that's kind of what you have to approach it kind of from the gateways. One of them is D&D encounters. The other one is getting into Magic the Gathering, which is a big expenditure in and of itself if you want to have your own decks and everything.
Yes, I know.
it worked out pretty well for me.
Yes, it did. Worked out perfect for you.
We get, because we go to CADG at the local college, and we get plenty of kids who come in with their one Magic the Gathering deck, and they're like, so, who plays D&D around here? And people are like, I play D&D around here, and then pretty soon you have a game going.
Yeah, yeah. Faculty, too, take part
absolutely.
Of that.
Yep.
I ran into... Is it Dr. Will?
Dr. Will.
Will.
Dr. Will.
He's like, I was listening to the show, and are you the same Steven? And is that Rodrigo? And that's pretty cool. And I was like, yeah, there you go.
Yep.
So second part of his question. Now, Dr. Will doesn't really sound like that.
No.
Then again, Matthew doesn't sound like that whenever I'm imitating him.
Yeah.
Pathfinder, 4th edition. I guess I'm looking for some guidance before I invest in one.
It largely comes down to your taste. Are you a person that likes the optimization and the additional crunch, then Pathfinder, yes. If you like things a lot more strongly codified, then... But
It's difficult to screw up 4th edition. It's a little easier to screw up Pathfinder from what I understand.
If you want something far more narrative and lighter...
But it's a lot more difficult to really, really, really solidly... I guess the word I'm looking for is personalized 4th edition too.
Yeah, that too. There's Fate systems, and Fate
Exalted.
Exalted is a very narrative, very
also crunchy though.
Pretty crunchy.
What does that mean?
Very rules.
Crunchy is rules
driven.
Heavy. Rules
okay.
Driven.
Yeah.
There's
two things.
Bryant subtitles for the hearing impaired.
That's fine. Certainly, if there's ever, Steven.
I could be jerky.
Throughout his tenure here as the noob, has definitely had to slow us down and say, what the hell does that mean? Plenty of times. So that's perfectly fine.
I just thought you were talking about breakfast cereals.
No.
Sorry.
So did I. Yeah.
There's basically the separation there is crunch, which is mechanics.
Right.
So that's your two weapon plus con type thing. Mm-hmm. And then there's fluff, which is
the ancient.
Yes. This sword is the ancient legacy of your family passed down through the generations. It's mechanics versus flavor.
You know, the other thing, too, before you invest in 4th E, if that's the way you want to go, you might want to just hold off and see what happens. Now, again, this is a little bit late in getting this advice to him, but if you haven't bought into it yet, you might want to hold off, see what happens with 5th edition.
Yeah, 5th edition is coming out soon, and,
stuff is starting to come out. Eonworld.org has
It is a major relaunch by a major company, and it's a good jumping on point, as we've seen in the past.
Yeah. The last thing he says is he would like to see Rodrigo's 10 commandments for DMing.
Okay.
So in the future, Rodrigo, there's an
article for
that.
I'll write up the list.
That'd be a good article, I think.
Yeah.
This one comes from Xander. What are each of your opinions on gnomes, both in general and as NPCs? I only ask this because my previous gaming group, I had a prejudice against them, or at least the 3.5 representation of them.
The 3.5 representation of them was really, really weak.
Like what? Yeah. What were they doing?
They just kind of not really... They were just...
What kind of gnomes were they? Were the happy gnomes that cobbled your shoes together?
Garden gnomes.
See, that was a thing.
Did they stand motionless and protect your
have a niche. They just kind of had all sorts of weird grab bag of abilities.
Gnomes kind of had two things going.
They were dwarfish.
They were little magical guys, and they basically filled other spots, like kind of mechanically. It's like... for example, from 3rd edition to 3.5, they changed the favorite class of gnomes from illusionist to bard. A gnomish bard seemed very strange, especially the way that they had been flavoring previously. And they ended up kind of changing them. I think part of the reason being that the gnomes didn't have a place to go.
Yeah.
Okay?
They changed it because nothing had bard as a favorite class.
Right.
And because... having a race that had their favorite class be a specific wizard subsection. It was a class of a class.
Undervalued.
Right. Was just frustrating.
Which favorite class is meh. Yeah. But I would say that was, unless you were way into multi-classing, which plenty of people were.
Yeah.
In 4th edition, they've once again changed gnomes. Gnomes are kind of, in a lot of ways, the red-headed stepchild of the system, because they get changed up a lot and drastically from edition to edition. Gnomes in 4th edition are critters that live in the Feywild. They nowadays look a little bit more feral.
Yeah. Big black eyes and
big black eyes. Yeah, kind of. I mean,
I can't
wait. They're still kind of cute, but they're cute in like.
Have you seen
like a baby badger kind of way?
Yeah, exactly. You know, they're cute like a scary mammal is cute. You know.
Yeah. I mean, I think they've been a little bit more better codified and while doing something completely different with them in 4th edition.
Right. The existence of the Feywild. You know, hilariously enough, has given the gnomes a place to live.
Yeah.
They are no longer worst halflings like they used to be.
Worst, you know, halfling
because
ever.
Yeah, because they, as another small race, they kind of competed for that space of happy-go-lucky little guy that the halflings had going, and your usual playing against type grim halfling,
which
just kind of didn't work for a gnome.
I've never encountered a gnome in game, so I couldn't tell you if I like them or not. Matthew, do you have any prejudices against gnomes?
Gnomes are depressing because they won't live past 400 years old, and in the last episode, they'll climb a mountain and they'll frickin' die. That's what's depressing. Never mind. I don't have a problem with gnomes. I think
childhood.
The third
Rob's depressed now. Thanks, Matthew.
Happy to be of service. It's just payback for you singing 99. The thing about gnomes, and I think the thing that I found in, I don't remember if it was 3rd edition or 3.5, anything that was smaller than human size, they handicapped it to almost ridiculous degrees.
Yes.
To the point where they're like, oh, well, you can only move 2 squares and you have to ride a dog. I'm like, I don't have to do anything like that. You suck.
You're not my real dad.
Exactly. You know, it's like when people start telling me about encumbrance, I'm like, hey, you know, if I ignore it, it doesn't exist.
That hasn't gone away. Small races in 4th edition actually are more, technically, more handicapped than they were in 3rd edition, because in 3rd edition, they actually had that extra bonus. They had a bonus
plus
to
one,
hit and a bonus to AC. In 4th edition, really all a small critter has going for it is a penalty to using weapons. That's all that being small is, and I really can't see how a halfling makes up for it.
No.
Or a gnome, for that matter.
Yeah, or even, you know, turning into an apple tree. It's just not worth the Saurus, you know?
Unless they're, you know, just something that don't use weapons.
Right. Ryan, our neighbor to the north, asks, what type of familiar is Randus's assistant? I'm wondering because I've been looking at the familiars in the Arcane Powers book, and none of them grant the quick draw feat for having them. Or is it that that's just a way to explain how Randus used the quick draw feat because he already had it?
No, I've thought about basically retroactively making it that, but actually what I did was go with the Crawling Hand, which was on the first expansion that they'd put online for Arcane familiars.
Right, and you know, In previous occasions, you know, I will usually have a wide sweeping rule of no stuff from the internet, but of course if it makes sense, and you know, Brian came up and was like, I really want this, we can flavor it this way as a little robot, and I was like, that sounds awesome. The feat is not overpowered, go for it.
Oh.
So it's like the animated hand or severed hand, severed hand, maybe. Yeah. Is that what it is?
I thought it was dismembered hand.
Is it dismembered hand? All right.
Okay. That does bring up another question that we have been bombarded with since the final episode. I guess at one point we said we were going to talk about how we came up with the plan for making the bomb and defeating the void. And I said it was all Randus's doing, and we did it off panel. The end.
Not quite. What it was is Rodrigo setting us down and say, okay, you guys need a plan. You need to have focus. What is it going to be? Tell me now.
And this was before, we didn't actually record that in episode, but it was, he needed to know so that he could plan the encounters and the story going forward.
And basically what it was the four of us sitting in a circle going, well, we need X, we need Y, we need Z. And what it really came down to is Rob went, this is how the mechanics must work. And Steven went, and wow, it used to go like this. And Brian went, wait, let me roll, oh crap. And I just kind of hopped around like Doug Henning and went, ooh-dee-loo, solution.
At the end of that, there was a cohesive plan. No, I mean, yeah. And we went through at least one or two iterations of potential plans, and I vetoed at least one of them because I thought that it might make for repetitive gameplay.
Oh, sure, sure.
But you know, in the end, between the five of us, we came up with that plan.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
Is that a good way to game or not? I mean, part of this is to make this entertaining for listeners, but at the same time, I guess it almost forces you as a DM to come up with a story that forces us to, you know, live in that world.
Well, and that's
kind of
the point.
Well, I mean, it's kind of a weird
way. That back and forth is what. In fact, part of what prompted me to do that is I had put a good deal of information. Some of them was nebulous information, basically telling you guys know stuff about this.
Right,
this is
right.
What you guys know about this, and. Mm-hmm. You know, I was hoping that you guys would take the initiative. I think that because the first and second seasons of the game were very linear,
mm-hmm.
You guys had some amount of trepidation to that, which is why, you know, out of game, I sat down and I was like, okay, guys, here's how I want the game to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Let's come up with a super cool plan. I think that's, obviously, I did it, so it must have some merit in my mind.
Right.
I think that's actually a good way to do it.
The thing that I don't want people to think when we said we sat down and come up with a plan, we weren't saying the story points. We weren't saying, in the end, Orym wins and Ket's going to make a deal with the devil and everyone else isn't going to make a deal with the devil. And none of that stuff.
Right.
We said, here's what we need. We need something to encase. We need something that can penetrate. We need something to move through. We need something to do this.
And I threw out, I was like, the only way that you'll get all the way to there is if you have a massive army backing you up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically me saying, what do you guys want to do? The players coming up with what they wanted to do and me saying, okay, here's what you're going to need.
Yeah.
Once that happens.
I'm pretty sure we didn't record that planning session, did we?
No, we did not.
I don't know. We might have
just never dared.
We had Matthew on the line, so.
Yeah.
I very clearly remember Rodrigo saying, okay, we're doing this, and Steven going, okay, we're not recording.
Hmm. Okay. All
right. Because Steven does that thing where he's like, okay, we're not recording, and Rodrigo went, no, it's okay.
Hmm. Okay. Well, and again, it just depends. We don't want to give too much away because that
yeah, we do.
Some of
we
the adventure for.
That was about the end of it.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah. I mean,
we've given away all of it except for maybe the weird side conversations that we had, and maybe the specifics of the plans that we passed on and things like that.
Well, but see, the end result was Randus went before Belbina and said, here's what we need, here's our plan, here's what we're going to do. Now we're doing this before all of the gods, sell them on it. So, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, it was kind of that collaboration after that plan.
I mean, that...
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys didn't even know that you were going to pitch it to all of the gods.
Right. But we knew what the plan was going to be.
right.
So
you liked it.
Give me an ulcer.
I liked it because you were forced to describe the gods and you used the word, I believe, amazing rack.
Yeah.
Which quite frankly, was the best way to describe all What's-Her-Face.
Melora.
Yeah.
Andrew writes in and
says, she's a fertility goddess. They tend to be well-endowed.
Andrew writes in and says, your podcast has inspired me to create my own homebrewed dice game, and I was wondering, what do you guys feel is the best dice system around? I'm not looking to directly copy the system, but making a heavily modified version of it. Just a straight D6 system, since the dice are always readily available to anyone, or a D10 system, or a D20 system, or what?
Well, it kind of depends on the purpose.
Yeah,
I do
and
like
you've brought up the fact that there are lots of different factors.
Yeah.
You can have, you know, because of the availability, something based on D6s makes sense.
I like that.
Then again, you know, you can order whatever dice you need online.
I'm pretty partial to 2D6 plus modifiers,
so
you get the nice bell curve.
Basically, you end up with what I would say, as far as dice systems for role-playing games, two basic kinds.
Yeah.
You get your whatever dice you're using, either 2d6 or a d20 plus modifier style things, like D&D uses, and like Big Eyes Small Mouth uses, and things like that. which I believe are actually 3d6 for that one. Or the old Star Wars game, I believe, also used that, like the old school.
It was
one.
Like a dice pool. You'd have like a trade and so many
that,
dice.
That is the other style. So you have your die plus modifier, and then the other one is a dice pool thing where your stats equal a certain amount of dice, and you're looking for hits. Yeah. So on a D6 is every 5 and 6 would be a hit.
I would say if you're going to go dice pool, go that route where you're looking for successes, not so much the Shadow Run or the old D6 where you're adding up the
or
dice.
Or you're adding up all the dice, yeah, because that actually gives you a gigantic fluctuation of things.
I guess I should say old Shadow Run, yeah.
Yeah, because new Shadow Run looks for hits.
I say modify the Yahtzee system to work into your environment.
That could be interesting, especially if that's like part of the like feel of the thing.
In fact, go ahead, sorry.
For all this discussion, really, what we're talking about is kind of extraneous. I mean, what's going to work for you is what's going to work for you. Yeah. So I would say, you know, if you look at it and you have a preference, pick one, because the basic expectation is that the dice represent, you know, a way of getting a random number. You could get the same thing from a random number generator or, you know, a particular group of monkeys.
And, you know,
so
if you have an iPhone or an iPad or even an Android device, there are apps out there that have dice, random dice generators.
Right.
Earlier on when we were going to play this, I had asked Rodrigo if he'd let me do that, and he said no, and so I went out and bought a dice set. But you can say what dice are you rolling, what combinations are you rolling, and it'll add them up for you, all that magical
stuff. And there are a lot of dice systems out there. Go to a used bookstore and find weird RPGs that you run across. Mm-hmm. They will have very strange dice systems. There are dice systems where you use
match sets.
Yeah, match sets of dice. There are games where you actually use, like, they're all pools, but you'll have like a pool of D12s for something that you're very good at, and a pool of D4s for something that you're not very good at.
Cortex.
Actually, Dogs in the Vineyard does something different or similar. You can there's lots of different things.
Dice pool with the height width, like monsters and other childhood
one roll engine.
Exactly. Yeah.
Hey guys, my name is Jake and I live in Massachusetts. Hi Jake.
Hey Jake.
I'm Steven.
Hey, Jake.
I live in Kansas. Love your show.
I think
Rodrigo has done an excellent job of weaving a great story and getting you guys involved.
Well, that was a great email.
You guys rock. Torque, you rock. Brian, keep it up. Please find a way to uncurse your dice. Now on to my question.
Not the dice.
Recently, I've been trying to run a game for some of my friends, and I've been running into a problem not with my players, but with myself. I cannot find a way to make it so that the players have choices, and I have results for the choices they make. I feel that I'm pushing them down a path that they may not want to go down. Do you have any tips for this?
There's a couple ways to handle this. You could actually, like, since it's kind of a nebulous, you know, are you worried that, you know, you're not giving them choices at like the lower levels or the upper levels? If you're, you know, where the story is going. If you're not, you know, feel like you're not giving them choices at the lower level, like, you know, oh, do we want to go take on the kobolds or the goblins? Well,
that's an easy choice.
That's an easy choice. Either you can, you got two options there. You can either set up both encounters, or you can reskin the encounter that you've got going.
We have troubles with kobolds to the south and goblins to the north. Can you help us?
If you're worried about this overall story choices, the big ones, you know, where in the first season, and the first half of Critical Hit so far, it was all, let's fix this, let's fix this, let's fix this. Rodrigo was basically telling us where we needed to go and what to do. And then once we got into Celestial Crusade, we had a lot more options as to where we were going, what we needed to get taken care of. You know, the first season was fun. I mean, you don't necessarily have to be able to have all those choices. You have to have those role-playing choices. You have to have the smaller choices. But, you know, having those, this quest is what you have to do, isn't necessarily the worst thing. If you're having troubles giving your players the choices, in the second half, like the last question we just answered, Rodrigo ended up having to set us down because we weren't making any choices.
Mm-hmm. We were meandering,
We were too meandering, but you just got to figure out what you can actually do for choices for your party.
Mm-hmm.
The Eberron game I'm running was kind of, let's get away from the drow, was the entire thing. All right. Where are you going to go?
Let's get Brian away from the drow.
Yeah, let's make sure Brian doesn't go back to the drow to get himself captured.
I was going to get one of them.
I've been looking through my books. I can't seem to find the stats for Ket's Whip. Where in what book can I find that?
The stats for the whip might be in
the Adventurer's Vault, aren't they?
For the whip itself, I don't have my computer out right now. We don't have the compendium ready. Let's read this later.
Okay, I will unmark that later and say, "Come back to this another time in a year."
I think it
we
is
will
in the Adventurer's Vault. No, no, it's not.
It might be in Martial Power. Were there more weapons in Martial Power? Maybe
there
not.
Might have been.
I don't know. I really don't remember where the whip comes from.
The D&D Compendium.
Archaic says, "I love the show. Been listening for a year now. I'm DMing a game that has a somewhat steampunk feel like your guys' game with a Warforged with a God complex." I don't really have any questions, but I'd love to get my message read on the air. Matthew is my favorite of you guys.
Yay!
You know, you're all great just the same. My whole crew listens to you, and I can't wait to hear what you guys are going to do next.
Awesome.
I started DMing 3.5 or 3.5 edition games homebrewed because of you guys. I made the jump to 4E. I hope you guys continue making the podcast, and I would gladly donate if I could. Wah, wah.
That's okay.
I would also be interested in the workshop that you guys had mentioned. Yeah, we might still do that in the future.
Have you ever noticed that my fans are broke?
You know, Matthew is Matthew's a man of the people.
It's the common man's character.
Yes, he's the common man's role player.
Yeah, Rodrigo's going to march us all down the Potemkin steps in the near future.
Yep.
I was just wondering which system you used for stats at character creation.
Point by.
Can you explain those?
Yeah.
I used a piece of paper.
In 4th edition, the standard system for getting your character stats is point by. So you start out with a bunch of 10s and an 8.
5 10s and an 8.
Yep. And you buy one more point in each stat for progressively higher. You get a pool of points. You start with like 15.
21.
21 points, something like that. You get. It's obviously been a while since we've created characters. For example, to get from a 10 to an 11, you spend 1 point. To get from a 11 to a 12, you spend 1 point. But then after a certain amount, it costs 2 points because the higher 14, the
15 costs.
Right.
Three.
So you can do that. That said, in the DMG or not the DMG, in the player's handbook and in the character builder and things like that, they have arrays which are predetermined things that have been made with the point by system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually what I steer my players towards is here are some arrays. These are actually the ones that they've come up are very good. And usually I go with the one that's like
18, 13, 10, whatever.
Yeah. The one that has an 18 and then progressively smaller numbers, or the one, if you have a character, for example, like Orym, who's big on intelligence and dexterity, the one that has 2 16s and then slightly more middle of the road stats.
Lots of people still
you roll four sixes seven times.
A lot of people writing in about single person campaigns. Again, I think go back to that D&D board game.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it's a good idea. And you know,
maybe
I
these
think,
guys that are running single person
yeah,
games
exactly.
need to meet up and
you just need to go online and find because it's true. There are lots of people who want to play D&D, they live two blocks away from you, but they don't know about it. There are lots of people who want to play role-playing games.
Meetup.com.
And the thing is, you have to be brave. You have to get out there. You have to be able to take a couple knocks, play in a couple of bad games before you can find a crew that you like. And
I'm still looking.
Yeah, that's basically how we've all done it.
Can you tell me...
Except for Steven, who just kind
just
of said...
forces.
Yeah, just kind of said, hello, employees, you are all running a D&D game for me.
Can you tell me one way of using a campaign settings? I have an idea of what to do, but I'd like to hear how you would use them. How do you guys use a campaign setting? That's the question.
I don't know what that question means.
Oddly phrased and pretty broad.
I guess he's talking about
Eberron
and
Forgotten
Realms and that kind of stuff.
Dark Sun are the big 4th edition ones.
See that?
You've got a few options. Most of the books have campaign hooks and just other things in them already.
And there's also a DM workshop book or something that has all the hooks and everything in there. I've got it here somewhere.
The DMG has hooks, and the DMG 2 actually has a lot of hooks.
That's
too.
The DMG 2 is what I'm thinking.
DMG 2 would have
And that's Dungeon Master's Guide 2. When we say DMG, Dungeon Master's Guide, Monster Manual, PHB, Player's Handbook.
And you know, all the
PB&J, I'm hungry.
Yes. We're for a Warhammer Fantasy Battle.
LOL.
Okay, PMF, we're done with the acronyms.
Iron Fist.
Anyhow, you
we'll
can
never
use the
be done with the acronyms.
You can use them exactly as they're written with just the general stories that they've got, the monsters that they have available. You can change it up just a little bit, you know, make it so your and your PCs are going to be the ones influencing this realm or something along those lines. Or you can change it up drastically, which is, you know, the one time, or I guess the one time I've used an actual stock setting was Eberron. I took a few things that I liked from it and decided, okay, this is how I'm going to go with it. Take a couple of the themes you like and run with them.
And the good thing about doing something like that is when you run out of steam or ideas, you can always go back and refer to those books, you know, or when we get some places like, well, I would like for there to be a big NPC. Hey, setting, is there already a big NPC in this town? Why, there is!
I think.
And if there's something you don't like about him, change it.
Non-player character.
The best thing I like to do, or, you know, the best reason I would like to have a pre-existing setting is if everybody's familiar with it, at least a bit, so that there's common ground.
That does give you that. And, you know, Critical Hit is my own setting that I've come up with. And a lot of the time, there would be times when the characters would know certain things about the world. And that's when roles come in and things like that. And a lot of the time I tell them. With a setting that everyone's familiar with, and there's some pitfalls there too, but with a setting that everyone's familiar with, you don't have to spend energy in that. Somebody can say, well, I go see the leader of House Tharashk. Oh, well, everybody knows that the leader of House Tharashk is this big half-orc and blah, 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 and he hates you. So you're going to go, you know, everybody's already on the same page with that.
Yeah. I would like to make my own miniatures. Do you have anything that would help me make them?
Nope.
Aldo, come help.
Yeah.
Elbo. Yeah,
there's places online that you can go
tag
to
in.
Find out. Yeah.
Well, it depends. If you're going to make a miniature of an NPC in HO scale, you want to make sure you keep the PC on the QT because the VP is a VIP, and then we'll end up MIA on KP. But if you're going to make your own miniatures, what I found actually when I've made my own miniatures in the past is I actually went and bought a whole bunch of relatively inexpensive, I believe most of them were like HeroClix type figures, and played around with, you know, what I did and didn't want and made kind of basically a prototype. You know, you take Hawkeye's left arm and you glue it to the Black Widow, and then you make sure, you know, you build your whatever you're doing. And then if you really want to go to the trouble of you know, building and cutting or, you know, doing the figures, I know for Warhammer you can customize specific little belts and buckles and things. You can go in and see, you know, what is available. But my thing would be the first thing you want to do is have something to work with and break.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And play with it, you know, and you get it to the point where you can buy 15 HeroClix for a dollar out of somebody's, you know, HeroClix bucket at a convention. Build what you want to build and then figure out how to do it in a more expensive miniature format.
I think the first decision you have to make, at least when you're getting started, is do you want to start with plastic or do you want to start with pewter?
Pewter, yeah.
I think pewter, although it might require more expensive tools to mess around with, there are plenty of already customizable miniatures because the Warhammer stuff is built so, like, within the game, changing up the way a character looks actually can change their stats. Like, there are these little mod sheets that show you what it is. So, stuff is already built into it to be customizable. So, you definitely want to look into Warhammer and Warhammer 40K stuff.
So, this comes from our good friend Adriana Ferguson. I've got a couple of questions.
She
started playing D&D a month or two ago, I think. Maybe 3 months ago.
I think it's longer than that by now. Probably a month or two from when she sent
that. That's what I'm saying. So you were looking at October, November probably is when she started playing.
If she said it was a month or two ago, then it would have been the Cretaceous period.
If your party takes the game in a way you're completely unprepared for, something that you can't figure out how to quickly reweave into the plot and head going, what does a GM usually do? He throws things at Steven and tells him to stop.
No. It depends. I mean,
Brian and tells him to stop.
That's what the other players do.
That too.
I mean, that's what I love about the RPG games is, you know, when people do that and take it in new and exciting, and as long as it's, you know, something that works within the setting.
Yeah, thematically.
Thematically, yeah. Yeah.
If it comes to the point where, you know, what the players are doing is, you know, completely distracting to you, completely distracting to the campaign, just not working with where you were going or what you were having fun with, you've got two options. You've got one option, really. Sit down and talk with them. You know, say, hey, this isn't working. This isn't what I want to do. Can we move this back to this, or do we need to change it up? If you're uncomfortable with it, if you can't figure out how to make it work, you can stop the campaign. If you're not happy with it, if you are not having fun anymore, it's over.
Now, in a more immediate sense, if you do or don't like what's going on, but let's say for a second that you're okay with what's happening, they just took it in a completely different way.
Yeah.
It is, you are perfectly within your right as a game master say,
you need to take a break.
Hold, I'm going to go write up the stats for some moon elves.
Yeah. But don't tell us that they're moon elves. Them.
Right.
There are a couple
of easy responses to this. Basically, it breaks down to one of three answers. Either take a moment, regroup, figure out what's going to do, or put the brakes on. And, you know, there's an up and down all this. Put the brakes on and tell your players, nope, sorry, we can't, you know, we're not going there. Which is, you know, both of those are problematic. And then there's the third option, which I always liked when I was game mastering in college, which is you take a really good shot of tequila and see what comes out of your mouth.
That works for some people, not everybody.
Oh, it always works.
Personal.
Yeah, for some people, it's really horrible what comes out of their mouth after a couple shots of tequila.
Adriana goes on in her email, do you guys think playing D&D has changed you at all? In this case, she got into playing D&D to help overcome shyness, and she thinks that it really, really did. I think for me, it's given me, you know, one of the things that, you know, working in, and maybe Matthew too, working in some of the jobs that we do, it's not super creative as much as we want to be creative. And so this gives me at least my outlet to be more creative. And I know people are like, well, you're in major spoilers and do all this. And it's like, well, no, there's a difference between talking about something in a very specific way and then creating something and building something. And I used to do a lot of improv whenever I was younger in theater and everything. And this brings a lot of that back. And I really enjoy that. And then plus I met Rob and Brian.
So there's a downside to it.
Rob, what about you? We'll just circle around and come back to...
Oh, I kind of have changed because of D&D. Like, I've always been interested in D&D.
Yeah.
Like, even since I was, like, a little kid, one of my... It's more friends of the family, but basically one of my cousins, he was in high school, I was in, like, elementary school. He was really big into D&D, and at our family Christmas, he got, like, three or four of us little kids that were really big on imagination together, and we sat down and messed around with it. So I've always been interested in D&D. It did give me, for the longest time, it gave me an outlet for one of the problems that I've had, where I had what the therapist said was a mild case of multiple personalities, where it gave me an outlet to be able to deal with that.
Yeah.
You need a new therapist. That is a never mind. I'm not going to go. That's ridiculous.
Now, I
ridiculous.
Had a point where I had problems dealing with certain things, and D&D just gave me the outlet to deal with my anger issues, deal with the fact that I would have stupid moon swings. So it's probably helped me out on that front. Mm-hmm. Changed me as a person. Maybe. I really like D&D. I got to meet cool people. I guess major spoilers. If without D&D, I wouldn't have been introduced to major spoilers at all.
Yep.
So,
and I'll say this before we get into how it's changed the rest of you. Wherever you guys are, if you're in college, especially college kids, and I had a big, long discussion with a bunch of kids today, the people that you meet in college are going to be those people that are going to be your friends and those people that you go to years and years and years from now. Matthew and I graduated college over 20 years ago, pretty close to 20 years ago.
When for the first time or the second time? 20 years ago, the second time.
Yes.
No, 15 years ago.
15 years ago, the second time. Matthew and I met each other in college. And when I started Major Spoilers, I knew, and we drifted around. You know, I moved to Atlanta and California and all over the place. And when I started Major Spoilers, I said, you know what? I need to track down Matthew. And I spent a good month trying to track down Matthew. Okay.
And by the way, I am visible from space.
Well, see, at that time, Google Earth hadn't scanned all of Kansas yet. So then the other thing that happened is my good friend Brian, he and I have known each other forever. He is best man in one of my weddings. And when I moved back to Kansas, he and I were talking.
I'm not laughing at that.
And then he and I met up when we were doing a thing for PBS. And it just so happened that Rodrigo was working for PBS there. And we would sit and talk and chat about comic books, and that's how Rodrigo got into Major Spoilers in the podcast. And then he said, hey, D&D. And I'm like, no, actually. He said, Magic the Gathering. I said, no, not Magic the Gathering. He said, Magic the Gathering. I said, no, not Magic the Gathering. And then he said, Magic the Gathering. I said, okay, here's $500 of Magic the Gathering. And then it was like, Rodrigo, no Magic the Gathering. Here's all these free cards for you.
Yay!
And then Rodrigo started in on the Dungeons & Dragons. And then he said, hey, here are some other people that you need to meet. And then we met Brian and met Rob. And it's all because of connections and Alex and everybody else and all of you listeners. That would not have been possible if it wasn't for those people that you meet when you're in college and you make those connections in college. And I'm sure years from now, Brian and Rob, even if they move, you know, to opposite ends of the country, are still going to be really good friends with each other. Mm-hmm. And so,
we're good friends.
Well, I perceive you guys as good friends.
Probably being apart from each other will probably help that.
Every time I see you two, you're always together. So, do kind of keep that in mind too. That's something that'll change if you're in college and you're playing Dungeons & Dragons, maybe even high school, and you've got a really good core group of people that you really mm-hmm. like and get along with. I mean, those are the kind of relationships that get built from playing games like these. And from, you know, just going through those experiences. I'm not sure you would have those same connections with people that you work with today. Mm-hmm. I mean, Rodrigo, you still have great friends from college that you go yep. and are in their weddings and travel around, and all you guys are the same way. Are you that way with your high school chums?
Yeah, actually, kind of? but I'm kind of a different case in that usually everywhere I go, I end up latching on to one or two people at most. So I have like a couple good friends from high school and a couple good friends from college.
Yeah, yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah.
And finally, they're all married. So yeah, yeah. I'm going to one more wedding this year, and that should be about it. I can't have any more friends.
Brian, how has Dungeons?
Well, luckily, there's little chance
you.
Of that.
Yeah.
So. I mean, yeah, it's definitely introduced me to some interesting people. That's for sure.
I'm right here.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it possibly helped with the various soft skills, social things, and some of that's probably also attributed to my work. But I don't know.
Matthew, what about you? How has D&D changed your life?
Yep.
I would say that if you said to me, "Did Dungeons and Dragons change?" It kind of depends on how you look at this, because when you say, did you change because of this, the answer is yes. But did I change because earlier in the week I forgot to deposit money in the bank and I just about had a crap fit and yelled at everybody in the house? Yes. Huh. Dungeons and Dragons is one of the ways that I was able to actually begin expressing myself.
That's true.
And there's kind of a common story that you run into is people who have, I don't know, you don't even necessarily think of it as any type of dysfunction, but you have, say, some sort of issue in terms of either your internal psychology or the externalization of what's going on inside your head. Mm-hmm. Now, when I was young and started playing D&D, of course, my three friends and I, we played together, and then we went into the steam tunnels under the city, and then I flipped out and ran through the streets of New York, believing that I was Pardew the Mystic. Mm-hmm. But it's okay, because I grew up to marry Meg Ryan. But more importantly, the fact that I just did
that's
that,
only because you have a pushy kid.
Exactly. The fact that I just did that is probably entirely due to the fact that I spent time talking in somebody else's face mm-hmm. when I was 15 and 16 and 17. Because you're at a point where you're 15, 16, 17, you're a horrible, disgusting mess. And as Eddie Izzard says, you're certainly not going to shag yourself. You have to learn to express yourself. And for me, it was difficult to actually express things that were meaningful, which is why if you really listen, there's a difference between when I talk and when I say something. And a lot of times when I'm talking and you hear me talking, you'll be in the middle of something and then all of a sudden, you know, this happened the other night. We're in the middle of a podcast and Steven and I are doing our, you know, Godzilla versus Mothra. And Rodrigo was in mid-sentence and I said, Margaret Thatcher. And Rodrigo said, wait. This ought to be good.
Yeah.
Because it's that moment where you can actually tell when I, like right now, you can actually tell that I'm trying to say something, trying to actually externalize something that feels important to me. I don't think I could do that when I was 15 and 16 and 17. The fact that I can now at 41 is because I spent time with Dungeons and Dragons and, you know, other methods of expression being someone that I wanted to be as opposed to someone that I was stuck being or someone that I felt like wasn't necessarily likable. You try and make yourself likable. You try to make yourself into the person that you really want to grow up to be. And then, you know, you drive yourself towards that. So yeah, your first D&D character will always be embarrassing because it's always, you know, kick ass howitzer explosion guy or something, you know, and God love them. I love vampire LARPers. And Rodrigo and I, we joke about vampire LARPers. Vampire LARPers, in my experience, are people who are really trying to be the awesome people that they are inside. They're trying to show you what that awesome is.
Yeah.
And they're trying to bring it out. And that's what role-playing does best for me, which is why Torque is fun, because Torque gives me a chance to kind of be, you know, action guy and to be action guy who doesn't have to think about the heavy consequences because the magic-y guys will figure out what all the big words mean, and then they'll tell me who I need to hit.
Rodrigo, you know, what about you? How's D&D changed your life?
Well, role-playing games in general, not certainly not just Dungeons and Dragons.
No, just Dungeons and Dragons.
Just Dungeons and Dragons.
He also plays Maces and Monsters.
Yes. I think, like Matthew, I mean, Dungeons and Dragons is a way for me to express myself, and that is something that is incredibly important to me. I need to pretty consistently express myself in the things that I do. And it used to get me into a lot of trouble in school.
That the theme that Clarissa explains at all?
No, that was Express Yourself.
That was going to be Express Yourself, I think. Goodbye.
That was the rock. It's still Clarissa explains it all. Steven, you're in the wrong key.
I thought it was Born This Way.
There you go. You know, when I was a kid, I remember one time they were like, okay, here's a drawing of a crayon. It's an orange crayon. You have to color it in orange. And I, you know, so if you think of your standard Crayola crayon,
right.
You see the both tips, and then there's a paper around it. So I colored both tips orange, and then I colored the paper around it purple. And the teacher was like, this is wrong. This is supposed to be an orange crayon. I'm like, the crayon is orange. She's like, well, why is the paper purple? And I'm like, it must have been a misprint.
Oh.
And that is the story of my life. And role-playing games give me the ability
to color purple
to put purple wrappers on things, basically.
That was a great question, Adriana. Thank you for writing in. I'm sure we'll hear more from you in the future. Also, if you guys want to hear more of Adriana, go check out her podcast. It's called The Super Future Friends. And if you're a fan of the Legion of Superheroes, she and Kristen go into issue, but
Working their way through. Yeah,
they've started at the beginning and are working their way through, and it's a great fun time.
Adriana and I are eventually going to be Jack and Karen of the internet.
Okay. My name is Paul. A good friend of mine got me into the show. So I've got a question for you. I just took over as a DM for my group of about 2 years. We play Pathfinder version. I was wondering, what's the best way to build magic items without overpowering my party? No punctuation here. I have good ways of giving items to them, but can't figure out what to give them. Please help.
I think you just have to look at, if you're playing Pathfinder, that's probably pretty similar to, it's basically 3.5 with a few tweaks here and there. First off, go back and read the material. I think a few of the questions we get in Critical, and I'm not necessarily this is just kind of a broad statement. A lot of the questions that we get are people who just kind of have skimmed the rules, and Pathfinder probably tells you a good rubric for handing out magic items. Now, that said, You want the characters to be protected, and just look at the stuff that NPCs have at that level, because Pathfinder, I believe, builds NPCs the same way that it builds PCs. So look at the stuff that your guys are fighting. Give them something probably that's slightly below that level, because usually monsters are built to be challenging, and kind of go from there.
P.S. Rob rules, all his characters are totally awesome.
Yeah. That's probably true.
I have a general question for Rodrigo. Is there a reason why we haven't heard any social skill challenges up to this point? All the skills challenges were about finding something or getting somewhere or research or something like that, never about talking to people.
Mm-hmm.
The only time I can remember is when Orm and Ket tried to get a cheap hotel with I didn't even know I had an uncle.
That was a great moment.
If I would have been at a player at your table and been a talky bard with all the social skills, I would have been left out, because there haven't been a lot of situations where these would have been useful.
Oh, well, you can.
Okay. Well, here's the answer to that. Well, first off, let me preface it by saying you wouldn't have been left out,
right?
Because you can utilize those within.
Yeah. Because
had there been a bard at the table, it would have been
because
a
I would
set
yes
challenges.
I would have tailored the game to the bard.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So that's one. Two. The main reason why and there's a difference between skill checks and skill challenges. Mm-hmm. There have been skill checks. Mostly to perceive and to convince people or what people are saying and change their opinions and things like that. They don't often happen. The reason for that is, and the reason why there haven't been full-on skill challenges focusing on social stuff, is because you guys can just roleplay that. A social skill challenge takes away the character's ability to talk. You basically take a step back and go into narration mode. I convince him that this is the right thing to do. Clatter, clatter, roll. I succeed. Okay, this is how the court proceeding goes from there. Whereas, all of the meetings with the gods, it's a lot more interesting when the players are actually in that position where the characters are actually talking and actually trying to figure that out. Now, I have told my players in the past, and I will reiterate it here, that you can always ask to roll. If you are at an impasse with something, with someone, you can always say, can I roll diplomacy to soften this up? If you say something that you wish you hadn't, you can say, can I roll diplomacy to spin that somewhere else? If there's a bunch of little goblins that are in your way, you can say, before the fight breaks out, can I roll intimidate to scare them away? You can. That is possible. If you fail, the thing will probably still continue along the same path. If you succeed, things will change.
Alex says, hi, folks. This is a question for Steve. Now that you're a pretty decent number of hours logged into D&D, have you found that you make any WoW comparisons anymore like you used to when you started the podcast for a dozen or so episodes? I think occasionally I've dropped a few WoW references here and there. And certainly if you really listen and you have played WoW, if you go back to that GM workshop, I purposefully scattered in a bunch of WoW references into that. To be quite honest, when I started this game, my only point of reference for RPG-type stuff and fantasy-type stuff was World of Warcraft. So everything that I was coming into this game was based on what I've known before.
Yeah.
Now, I probably don't make as many because people hate it when I make it.
Yeah.
Because there's a big tabletop versus a contingent console
of people who are upset about the World of Warcraft
comparisons. Yeah. And I think that's the issue, is that it just does happen online a lot. So people kind of.
The two games are still very similar in a lot. They do influence each other a lot. But no, I really don't make a lot of WoW references as much anymore, number one, because they're not needed, because now I have a point of reference for how this game works, and understand the mechanics a hell of a lot better than I did, 2 years ago. But
17 years ago.
People want me to start making WoW references. I mean, I'll start sprinkling them back in.
Yeah, I think it was more not asking about the references themselves, but how often do you find yourself being like, oh, this is similar to how
I've mentioned, even without making
the reference.
Right. If you go back and listen to the...
Has your frame of reference reversed to where you play WoW and think, hey, this is like D&D?
There are a couple of times when we'll go through a spell or I'll read through the spell book and I'll go, oh, so that is exactly what a druid would do in World of Warcraft. So I do find myself kind of flipping back forth that way. But to be honest with you, since we've started playing Dungeons & Dragons, which is probably the core of my free time. Mm-hmm. This is my free time.
Right.
I don't have time to play WoW. I haven't played WoW in over a year and a half.
No, tell me about it. I get constant migraines because I actually did. I went out and I bought Skyrim because I got stuck on it.
And you got an arrow to the knee?
Yeah, I did get an arrow to the knee and to the head. My character walks around half the time with like an ice shard stuck to his head. But I keep I'm not getting any sleep because I don't have it. I don't have time during the day, right. So I start playing Skyrim at like midnight. Right.
And of course,
I end at like 3, and then I go to sleep for like 2 hours and get up and go to work.
And of course, for me, it's there's another addition into the household that wasn't here when we started playing this game. Heck, when we started playing this game, the boy was what, 2?
Yeah.
So he was barely sitting up on a table watching Rodrigo and I play Magic, mm-hmm. and then wanting to know what we were doing with all these little toys on the table.
Yep.
So there's a lot of different perspective. Let's see if there's one more question that we can get to. Here we go. No, 5th edition. Everybody's great. Matthew is great. I'm a 13-year-old girl.
No, you're not. There are no 13-year-old girls on the internet.
Rules. Ket is awesome.
Torque rules. Ket rules.
Go Team Smith. Hmm. Oh, here's one that people bring up all the time. I think they honestly mean it in jest. But I'm not sure, so maybe we need to discuss it. Everybody's like, when are you guys going to build that statue for Smith? When are you guys going to build that statue for Smith?
When are you guys going to build that statue for Smith?
The way I see it is, when have we had time to build a statue for Smith?
The characters certainly have not had time. And, if you're like, if you're sitting there, being very upset, literally being very upset because they haven't built a statue.
First need to find the Sarkle family.
Yeah, we haven't even had time to do that.
Yep.
So I'm curious, Rodrigo, now, granted, the season 3 took about a year and a half, year and couple of months, maybe just right at a year or something like that.
I think probably right at a year.
I think it was for like 52 episodes, something like that. How long in real time did those events take place? Are we talking about weeks, months?
No, you're talking at least a year. It would have the whole thing, especially because the actual voyages travel would have taken a long time. And you guys were in Shalai for at least a couple months.
Mm-hmm.
All in all, I would say each major arc, so seasons 1 and 2 being one and Celestial Crusade being the other, I would say think about them in terms of around a year, either slightly over or slightly under. We haven't kept track of time too tightly,
mm-hmm.
largely because that's the way that I like to keep my stories, to give them a little bit more flexibility. But you can't get lost here, where it's like, how long did it take us to get to Diamond Throne? A week?
Yeah. Well, but I mean, there were times in Shalai when we were traveling from
if you start adding it up until that last couple sessions when Orym finally figured out, teleportation circles.
Right.
Just traveling around Shalai took weeks.
A day.
A couple days.
Yeah. So I just didn't know if anybody had ever thought about that. But, when you think about it, when Battle on the Moon ended and Smith died and we had the funeral, we didn't have a chance to make any preparations because we were immediately taken to the next place. Yep. And from there it was like, yes, there were some moments where we had some relaxation moments, everybody mm-hmm, got a chance mm-hmm. to go off and do something. But for the most part, it was, what are you guys doing to get the voice
to advance?
So I think that's probably a good place to start, or to stop, I'm sorry, this time. What's coming up next? Well, next time we'll be turning things over to Rob for a couple of weeks. To see what he can do, and to give you a little teaser, think about this. Paladins meet dinosaurs. Check it out next time on Critical Hit, the off-season. If you have any questions, podcast@majorspoilers.com. If you enjoy Critical Hit and you want to see it continue, and you enjoyed this episode, consider giving us a donation or leaving us a tip. You can head over to majorspoilers.com. There are a number of ways that you can leave a donation. You can leave a one-time donation. A lot of people do that. Or if you'd like to see this continue onward and you've got some money, a $2, a $5, or a $10 a month, $2 a month, that's 24 bucks a year. You can consider doing that as well. Every little bit helps us out. I know not everybody has money, not especially in this economy and things that are going on right now, but we appreciate it. It helps us go forward and helps pay some of our ongoing costs. And we do have some big costs that are concerning me and probably everybody else at the moment as well. But that's that. If you can do it, great. If not, fine. We'll be back next time with Rob's Great Adventure. Can't wait to do it. And until then, here's hoping all of your dice rolls are critical hits.
Program so good, it's like you're there!